President Jimmy Carter, thank you very much for joining us.
Judy, it's good to be with you again. Thank you for letting me come.
Well, you're here to talk about your book, and we are going to talk about that. But first, just a few questions about what's in the news, starting with Ukraine.
Yes.
Do you believe that President Putin and the Russians are paying enough of a price for going in and taking Crimea?
Judy, I never have thought that anything could have deterred Putin from taking over Crimea. No matter what the Western world had done, he would still have done this, because Russians have always considered Crimea to be part of theirs, and as you know, majority of Crimeans wanted to be part of Russia, so that was inevitable. But I think now he has to be stopped and prevented from taking any further military action. And I don't really think he's going to. I may be wrong, but I don't think he's going to. I watched his speech very carefully, and I think he's going to seduce the Eastern Ukrainians who speak Russian about how attractive Russia is by blandishments and loans and grants and trade concessions.
But you don't think any further punishment for taking Crimea should happen?
I don't think so. But I think if he escalates, then yes. But at this point, I don't think so.
What if he does, though, go into another country? What should happen then?
Well, I don't want to tell people what to do who are in office now no more than I do about it, but I remember what happened when the Soviets invaded Afghanistan in Christmas Day of 1979. Yes. Well, I was very forceful because I saw the danger of them going further, and that's similar to what it is now. And I sent Brezhnev a direct message that if you go any further, we will take military action, and we will not exclude any weapons that we have. And I also broke diplomatic relations. I withdrew my ambassador. I declared an embargo against him. And I began to arm the freedom fighters in Afghanistan who were repelling the Soviet troops. So I took a lot of bold and very aggressive actions, some of which I think would be excessive now.
Excessive. So
I think so.
Should not happen today.
Well, I think it's perfectly legitimate, and I think it would be justified to arm the Ukrainian military effectively and let everybody know that they're being armed, yes.
Well, there's a whole lot to talk about with Ukraine, but there are a number of other things I want to ask you about. You, so much of your presidency was devoted to making peace in the Middle East. You, of course, were responsible, you and Menachem Begin and Anwar Sadat, for the Camp David peace accords. A number of presidents have tried to do more since then. Right now, Secretary of State John Kerry, very focused on that area. Do you think he's making real progress?
He's making more progress than has been made, I'd say, in the last 15 or 20 years. And he's done it almost on his own, apparently. And I stay in touch with him. I give him some, you know, subtle advice by email on what I think might be done. But I hope that he'll be bold and aggressive and lay down a so-called benchmark or working process guidelines by which they can be both sides can be persuaded. But I think that he by himself can't do anything in order to be effective, at least in Israel. The President of the United States has to be directly involved and get the whole weight of the United States government behind any controversial proposal. In that case, I think they have a chance to succeed.
You said last night, you told Charlie Rose in an interview last night, you don't think the Palestinians will ever agree to the Israeli demand that they be that it be declared a Jewish state, and you said that that you didn't think the Israelis would ever agree to give the Palestinians the right of return. I mean, that basically says the current talks aren't going anywhere.
Well, I don't know what's going to be proposed by, you know, by Secretary Kerry, but I think it's almost impossible for an Arab who lives in the West Bank to agree that Israel is a Jewish state, because about a fourth of the population of Israel itself are Arabs, and they can't deny their own fellow, you know, Muslims just because they live across the border. And I never have thought that it was possible at all for Palestinians to be permitted to come back into Israel in any sort of unrestrained way. I think the best alternative there is not to let them come back into Israel, but into the West Bank and Gaza, and then to pay those in Israel, maybe, if the international community decides to, some reparations for the property that they lost.
I want to also ask you about spying by the U.S. government. It's a story.
It's
very much in the news these days. We learned more this week about what they're doing, but you said in an interview just in the last few days that you expect that the NSA, the government, has been looking at your emails, listening in on your phone calls. So when you've got something important to say, you said you send it by snail mail. Are you sure no one is reading your snail mail?
I can't guarantee that. But, you know, I don't feel paranoid about it. But it's been generally acknowledged that every telephone call made, everyone that you make, everyone that you receive by email, all including, is recorded. And they claim that they don't read those messages, but they know that you made the call and to whom you made it and how long it lasted. And if they later want to see your particular call, they can do so. And I think that's very excessive. And I had to deal with that when I was president as well by passing the so-called FISA Act. And that was designed to prevent any American intelligence agency from monitoring any single call of an American. And now, of course, they record them all.
The book, it's titled A Call to Action, Women, Religion, Violence, and Power. You've said this is the most important book you've ever written.
It is.
Why?
Because the crimes against women and girls exceed almost anything that I've known in my lifetime as far as human rights abuses. And it goes all the way from intense commitment of slavery, human trafficking in this country and around the world. About 100,000 girls in the United States of America were sold into slavery last year, according to the State Department. 800,000 in the world across international borders. And I think the most horrible statistic that's included in this book that's quite accurate is that there have been about 160 million little baby girls killed in this generation by their own parents because they didn't want to have girls, they wanted boys.
By abortions, you mean?
And that includes, most recently, abortions, because now with the advent of sonograms, even in the poorest countries, they can detect the sex of a fetus when it's being developed, and they abort it. Otherwise, they just wait until the girl is born and then strangle her to death. Now, 160 million is compared to, say, 30 or 40 million people that were killed in the Second World War. So there's an entire generation of females that are no longer living. About 50 or 60 million of these in China and India. In fact, there's one area of India where for every 1,000 men living, there's only 650 women living. And they've been killed by their parents. And now there's a great shortage of brides to marry men in some of those countries, China, even South Korea. And women are now sold excessively as slaves around the world.
I'm curious, President Carter, about why at this stage of your life, your career, this is something you want to focus on. This is what, your 28th book?
And, that's right.
And why this, and what do you think can be done about it?
Well, the Carter Center has been active in 79 countries around the world, very active. We've had specific projects in that many countries. And a lot of them are in the developing world, and we've seen the deprivation of women's rights much more than it is in the United States, in those areas with genital mutilation, cutting, and with honor killings and something things like that. And so this, to me, is this thing that I might do in the remaining years of my life that would bear the richest dividends if I can just get the world aroused to the actual facts about what's happened to women and girls and get us to act in concert. And every crime against females that's mentioned in this book, I've got specific recommendations on what we can do, particularly here in the United States.
And you're saying this is something you want to continue to put focus on?
Yes, I will continue that as long as I live. And I want the Carter Center to be kind of a center for people who want to join with us in this, I'll call it a crusade, to protect women and girls. The United States is very culpable. You know, not only do we deprive women of equal pay, but on our university campuses, we have probably the worst sexual abuse of any other place in America. There are only 4% of the rapes on college campuses even reported because the university presidents of the greatest universities don't want to report sexual abuse on their campuses because it brings discredit to them. So they discourage female students from reporting rapes. And what this does is result in a few boys on the campus, a few men on the campus, who know they can rape a girl with impunity, because they're not going to be reported, and if they are reported, they're not going to be criminally prosecuted for it. And the same thing applies, as you well know, in our U.S. military.
President Jimmy Carter not shying away from the tough, tough subjects out there. We thank you very much for being with us.
I enjoyed it, Judy. Thank you.